Tonight, I am going to read to you from John chapter 11. And this is a chapter I've preached on a couple times now, but there's so much meat in this chapter that I want to preach on it again and just pull out some more things. Tonight specifically, I want to remind you and inspire you even. Oh, got it. Thank you. Tonight, I want to remind you and of something you already know, and hopefully inspire you with this, and that is this. Jesus is always right. Jesus is always right. Again, something I think you probably already know, but it's good for us to be reminded of it and to remember and even to be inspired by it. You know, sometimes we find ourselves in all sorts of situations. You know, whether they're situations with our friends, maybe people we work with, you know, our family, our, you know, spouse, child. You know, we find ourselves in all sorts of situations where we can be in the same scenario, but have multiple opinions about that scenario. I'm sure you've been there. This happens a lot. You know, where everybody is in the same exact thing or sees the same thing, but everybody has a different idea about how it should happen or how it should be handled. I was in a car accident a while ago. It was just a little fender bender. It was years ago, actually. And somebody had cut me off. They came into my lane, and so I hit them. I hit them, but it was their fault. And it was a minor accident. It wasn't a big deal. We weren't going that fast, so we pulled over to the side, and I got out of the car. This was up in upstate New York, and I got out of the car thinking that the person would be like, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I cut you off." That's what I expected. But when the person got out of the car, they looked at me and said, "What happened? Why did you do that? Why'd you hit me?" And I said, "Why did I do that?" You know, I said, "You cut me off." And this proceeded to be an example of one scenario with multiple opinions about what happened. But see, this can happen in our lives as well, in our relationships and in our decisions and where we're going and what we're doing and the things that we are going through. But the thing to remember in the midst of all of that is this: Jesus is always right. Jesus may have a different perspective than everybody. Jesus may have a different opinion. He may have an idea. He may have a viewpoint. And let me give you a hint, something that, again, I know you know, but it's good to be reminded that if your viewpoint and Jesus's viewpoint differ, guess who's not correct? Well, it's you and it's me. Why? Because Jesus is always right. So let me read to you John chapter 11. I'm going to read you this story. Again, great story, an amazing story with Jesus and with Lazarus and Mary and Martha. And we're going to pull some things out of it that will help us that we can apply to our lives today. So this is John chapter 11, beginning in verse 1. It says, "Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sister sent word to Jesus, 'Lord, the one you love is sick.'" All right, so here's the beginning of this story. "When he heard this, Jesus said, 'This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it.' Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. And then he said to his disciples, 'Let us go back to Judea.'" Verse 8, "But Rabbi, they said, 'A short while ago, the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you're going to go back?' And Jesus answered, 'Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in the daytime will not stumble, for they see by this world's light. It is when a person walks at night that they stumble, for they have no light.' And after he said this, he went on to tell them, 'Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up.' His disciples replied, 'Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better.' And Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, 'Lazarus is dead, and for your sake, I was glad I was not there, so that you may believe, but let us go to him. Then Thomas, also known as Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, all right, let us also go that we may die with him. He didn't say all right. I added that one in. But verse 17, he says, on his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus was already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now, Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he'll rise again in the resurrection at the last day. And Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. No one who believes in me will live. Let me try it again. I'm saying the exact opposite of what it actually says. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she replied. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. After she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. The teacher is here, she said, and is asking for you. When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now, Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house, comforting her, noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, they replied. Verse 35, Jesus wept. The disciples said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind have kept this man from dying? Verse 38, Jesus once more, deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there's a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called out a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. Here is an amazing story that we've heard many times about Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. But I think there are some incredible principles here for us that we can learn, especially when we're talking about this idea that Jesus is always right. This is an interesting story. It's an interesting story because it's full of clashing expectations, isn't it? I mean, you got Jesus, you know, on one hand, who hears about a problem and he decides he's going to address it in his way and on his timetable. But then you've got the disciples, right? They're watching the same exact scenario, but they think Jesus is a little bit crazy for even going back to Judea in the first place. And then when Jesus eventually does get there, Mary and Martha are there, and they've got their whole opinion about the same exact scenario. Their opinion is that Jesus was too slow. Their opinion was that they didn't quite understand or needed some clarification about the resurrection. They even had opinions about the smell that was going to be incurred in this thing. And I'm not saying that all of these people are bad or evil. I'm just saying they're just like us. And they just needed to learn the same lesson that we need to learn and be reminded of so often. That is this: Jesus is always right. Same scenario. Everybody sees the same thing. But Jesus's opinion is right. So what are some principles we can learn here? What are some things we can take away? I want to encourage you in this moment just to take a moment and think about your life and think about something that you may be struggling with right now. Maybe it's something immediate that's right in front of your face that just happened, you know, on your way home from work or just happened right before you got on midweek. Or maybe it's something bigger, something more chronic, something that just sort of weighs on you over time and just sort of sits on your heart and burdens you. Maybe it's somewhere in between. I don't know what your thing is, but I want you to think about what your thing is. Because you, like these people, are in a scenario where you probably have thoughts about it. You probably have opinions about what needs to happen and what shouldn't happen and how quickly things should happen and what should be and what shouldn't be. You probably have your opinion about it. But what we're going to do is we're going to look at Jesus and his perspective of this scenario. And I want to encourage you to apply this to the scenario you're thinking about right now in your life. Okay? So what do we learn? What is it that we learn? What principles can we apply? What was Jesus' perspective? Well, one perspective we see of Jesus in this is simply this. It's not over yet. This is one of Jesus's opinions about this scenario. Everyone's got their thoughts. Everyone sees the same thing. But Jesus's opinion is this. It's not over yet. Look back in verse 4. When Jesus got the news about Lazarus, it says, when he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." You know, Jesus hears about Lazarus, and his first response is, "This sickness of Lazarus's will not end in death." Now, as a reader, or maybe if you were a person that was, you know, sitting in the crowd and heard Jesus say that and watch everything play out, you may be tempted to think, whoa, Jesus, you're actually wrong, because he does die. He does actually die. But you got to look at it a little bit closer. The secret is you got to really listen to what Jesus said here. Jesus didn't say he wouldn't die. Jesus says it won't end in death. And that's exactly what happens. He didn't say there wouldn't be death. He just says it wouldn't end in death. And the point is Jesus is making, I think, is this, is it's not over yet. So whatever scenario you are in your life, whatever is going on, whatever this challenge is or multiple challenges are, you know, Jesus looks at our scenario and goes, okay, but it's not over yet. It's not over. In fact, he reiterates this again in a different way when he's talking to Martha in verse 25. They're talking about the resurrection. And she says, yes, I believe in the resurrection. I know there's a resurrection. And one day, you know, and she does have a degree of faith. You know, she's saying the right things and she's not wrong. But Jesus leans in and just kind of breaks the box open a little bit more and says, no, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. So Jesus is reiterating this thing again, is their death may be involved. There may be trouble. There may be difficulty in your scenario. But his point is this, it's not over yet. You see, this is a message of hope. That whatever it is that is you're up against, whatever you're struggling with, whatever's challenging you, as big and as large and as mighty as it may seem, it's not over yet. You know, hope is powerful, isn't it? I mean, I want to say I appreciate so much the last parenting workshop we had a couple Saturdays ago. If you were there, you remember it was Mark and Elaine Calavero. We've known the Calaveros for a long time, and they have three grown daughters. They now have, I think they said three grandchildren now. And their daughters are all adults. They're all married. But they shared at our parenting workshop, they shared, you know, a message from the other side of parenting. You know, because, you know, if you are a parent, if you've parented children, you know that there are times it can be very challenging to your faith. At times you can even feel hopeless. But it was great to have a couple like them who've been Christians for decades and have helped, you know, their children grow up. It was just inspiring to hear them and to really just hear them say, in essence, it's just not over yet. It's not over. So when you run against a difficult situation in your life, you remember, hey, it's not over yet. It's not over. By the way, if you missed the Calaveros, you can go to the website and scroll through the sermon archives, and you'll find their class there. It's Mark and Elaine. It's incredibly encouraging, and I would like to encourage you to listen to it if you haven't. But what trials are you facing right now? What is it that you're thinking about? Is there an area where you feel like you're just at the end of your rope? And you don't know, man. You don't know if you can go, you know, if you can go any further. If hope, it seems very, very hard to find. Jesus tells us through this. Jesus teaches us that it's not over yet. Hang in there. Have hope. Second thing that we learn, second little perspective that we see from Jesus in this scenario. Again, same scenario, many, many different opinions about it. But Jesus, because he's the one who's right, what is his opinion? Well, his opinion is that it's not over yet. Hang in there. It's not over. Two, nothing is too big. So the second thing that we see is nothing is too big. Let's go back and reread verse 21. Again, this is Jesus and Martha. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. And Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he'll rise again in the resurrection at the last day. And Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? And this question isn't just for Martha. This question is for us. Do you believe it? What is Jesus saying? Again, Martha is in agreement with the spiritual fact that there will be a resurrection. And even though Lazarus has passed away, that he will rise again. We had a whole series on that. If you missed any of that, go back and listen to it. It's a very inspiring series that we did about rising again, about the resurrection. But Jesus takes a moment to say, no, it's not just about rising again one day. I'm here. It's about me. He steps in and breaks it open and says, yeah, there's a resurrection, but I am the resurrection. I'm here. Again, paraphrasing it, he's saying, listen, nothing is too big. Nothing is too big for me. You know, Martha, she's probably searching for meaning, and she's trying to do the right thing in this very, very difficult time. But she's not really getting it until Jesus leans in and says, I got it. I got it. I got it. I can handle it. I can handle this problem. It's okay. He says, I am the resurrection. You know, in life, sometimes we get stumped. But you know what? God never gets stumped. God never gets to a point where he's like, oh, I don't know, this is just way too hard. That never happened. Happens to us, but it doesn't happen to God. God knows there is a solution. You may not see it. I may not see it, but God sees it. He sees it and he knows it. And so it requires us to have some faith. We've just got to make sure that we are willing to accept his solution when it arrives. That's really the challenge for us. The challenge isn't always to see the solution. The challenge is that when the solution does arrive, are we going to be willing to embrace it? Or we got to be careful, because our unwillingness to see God's perspective, to embrace God's solution, if we're not careful, it can cause us to miss out. It can cause us to miss out on God's miracle. I mean, later, what is the solution? Jesus goes up, tells them to move the stone away, and what do? They protest it. So Jesus is bringing the answer. He's bringing the solution. And he starts by telling them, move the stone away. And they protest God's solution. Why? And what was their reasoning? Because it doesn't make sense. It's gonna stink, Lord. This is going to stink. You know, and so they almost miss a miracle because they were concerned about the smell. You know, is it possible that God is bringing a solution to you right now in this scenario that you're thinking about, this problem that you're wrestling with? Is it possible that God is bringing you a miracle, but because it doesn't make sense to you, you're being resistant? Is that possible? The truth is, miracles can be messy at times. And Jesus's commands, they just rarely fit into our boxes. You know, I mean, think about this. Jesus's direction rarely just, it often goes outside of what we thought it should be. We have big problems, but we have to believe that God is bigger than those problems. And this takes trust. Proverbs 3, verse 5, says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not, or don't lean, on your own understanding. Wow. I mean, right there. Trust the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your understanding. This is so applicable to me and to us so many times in our lives, where we have our understanding, but the call is for us not to lean on that, but to lean on God. Jesus, he's always right. And his opinion is often different than the opinions that we have in our scenario. What is his opinion? Well, his opinion we can learn from this is, it's not over yet. It's not over yet. Hang in there. Nothing is too big. Nothing. I can handle it. Nothing is too big. And then we also see in closing here that Jesus, his opinion of this scenario is this. There is a greater purpose to what's going on. There is a greater purpose. It's not over yet. Nothing is too big. And there is something greater we're trying to achieve. Go back to our text here, verse 4. We'll read it again. It says, when he heard this, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. You know, Jesus could have just, you know, snapped his fingers from a distance and Lazarus would have been healed or would have come back to life. You know, it could have all been taken care of. But this process that they went through, and we know he could do it because he actually did it with somebody else. He spoke and healed somebody from a distance. But this process happened for a bigger purpose. And what was the bigger purpose? Jesus teaches was to glorify God. Was it so people would glorify God? This is why we do what we do. This is why we serve. It's why we love. It's why we evangelize. It's why we give our special contribution. It's why we deny ourselves. It's why we go to church. It's why we do everything. It is our desire. It is our goal. It is our purpose to bring honor, to bring praise, and to bring glory to God. This is why we do what we do. This is the greater purpose. And Jesus adds to this even more down in verse 41 and 42. It says, so they took it when they finally removed the stone. It says, Jesus looked up and he said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. And I knew that you always hear me. This is his prayer to God. He says, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. And so the greater purpose of this particular event wasn't just to bring glory and honor to God, but to bring glory and honor to God through creating faith in the people around. So the purpose is even greater than, it's about giving glory and honor to God, but specifically it's about, in this situation, it was about growing our faith to point us to giving glory and honor to God. You know, and these are sometimes, you know, this is why God allows us to go through difficult things in our lives. It purifies us. It purifies our motives. Sometimes our, you know, I don't know about you, sometimes my motives are not pure. Sometimes I'm into recognition, or sometimes I'm into my glory, or sometimes I'm just doing things because it's my habit, you know, and I'm not doing it out of honor for God. I'm just doing it because it's what I always do. But God is interested in genuine faith. That's what God wants. He wants pure, genuine faith. And he will use challenges and trials and difficulties to as like a furnace to purify our faith. In fact, there's a scripture in 1 Peter 1 that says just this. 1 Peter 1, verses 6 through 7. It says, "In all this you greatly rejoice, though now, for a little while, you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. These have come so that the proven genuineness of your faith, which is of greater worth than gold, which perishes even though refined by fire, may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed." There it is. There's the package. It's telling us that one of the reasons that we go through trials, some of the trials in our life, and the grief and the difficulties, is God is using it like a furnace. The same way you heat up gold to remove the impurities, your faith, which it says is of greater worth than gold, but your faith is being purified through the difficulties, through the trouble, through the trials, so that it's genuine. Because genuine faith results in praise, glory, and honor for God when Jesus Christ is revealed. Man, that's what God wants. That's his perspective. There's a greater purpose. A greater purpose is that faith would be built and God would be glorified. You know, what we do, the good things we do, it's not about us. It's not about our kids. It's not about our parents. It's not about our friends. It's not about our convenience. It's not about our success. It's not about our feelings. It's not even about our understanding of what's... It's good to understand. It's great when we do understand. But it's not even about us. It's not about that. It's about God. It's about us glorifying and honoring God, of having genuine trust in him. Jesus said, "For God's glory," this is for God's glory, "so that God's Son may be glorified through it." John chapter 11, one situation, multiple opinions about that situation. People, they were afraid, they were confused, they were disappointed, they were perplexed all throughout this scenario. But Jesus's perspective was that it's not over yet. Hang in there. It's not over. Nothing that you're encountering is too big for me. I am the resurrection. I can take care of it. And there is a greater goal, a greater purpose than even the trial that you're going through right in front of you. We've got to remember that Jesus is always right. So let's humble ourselves. Let's humble ourselves to his perspective. As we read in Proverbs 3, verse 5, let's trust in the Lord with all of our heart, and let's not lean on our own understanding, because Jesus is always right. We're going to close out our midweek service with another song, a final song, a recorded song here, and just to encourage us, to inspire us, and then we'll end afterwards. We'll open it up and we'll have a time of fellowship. This song that we're about to hear, it's really kind of a special song. It's a special song because it's just a group of people singing. This was at a New York City Church of Christ staff meeting about 6 years ago. The New York City Church of Christ, with all of our interns and all of our administrative staff, we have about 50 people that work for the job, some full-time for the church, some full-time, some part-time. And we have regular meetings where we get together and we pray and we fellowship and we do Bible studies and we talk about things. So we have regular meetings. But part of that is we often sing. And this particular meeting, this was in 2017, I just found this and it just inspired me. So I thought I'd share with you. But I set my phone down and just hit record and you can hear the purity of it. It's not a professional recording. It's not even people that know they're being recorded. It was just people singing to glorify God. I put a little graphic to it just so you have something to look at. I put the title up, but it's the song, Oh Happy Day. So we'll close out with this song now. Oh,